This is The Guardian.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Dortmund beat PSG in front of a quite sensational yellow wall. Nicholas Füllkrug with the ultimate good touch for a big man, taking the ball out of the sky and hammering it past Donnarumma. Dortmund to a man were brilliant. Adeyemi and Sancho gave the Paris fullbacks a torrid time. Can, Brandt and Sabitzer ran midfield. While it's hard to think of one PSG player who had a good game, and yet they create as many chances and probably still go into the second leg as favourites. We'll look ahead to the Europa and Conference League semi-finals and preview the Premier League games tonight, tomorrow and over the weekend with both Man City and Arsenal at home. We're all expecting an as-you-were opening to Monday's pod. Also today, Kloppy Waters for Emma Hayes, and then there's 777 FIFA and Philippe. All that plus news of spreading vasectomies, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Archie Rintutt, welcome.
Did you say spreading vasectomies?
I did. We'll get to it. Yes. Welcome. Hi. How are you? You're not going to get one during the pod. I mean, it seems unlikely, but
thanks.
Be good content.
I'm good.
I imagine. Barry Glendening, hello.
Hello, Max.
And bonjour, ça va, Philippe Auclair.
Ça va, mon vieux, et toi?
Very well, thank you. Ah, ça va, bof, bof, bof. Right, D.I. Sizzle says, oh my God, what a dream lineup. Very kind of you. Let's begin in Dortmund. Archie, you were there, and we bang on about the yellow wall, right? It's kind of cliche, it's a thing we know about Dortmund. But that was amazing yesterday.
Visually and audibly, they were all in from an hour and a half before kickoff. And I think that helps build your atmosphere as well. And they weren't just pumping out tunes for the hour before either. It's allowed to grow. And what a difference that can make on a European night, because at Dortmund, there's been kind of murmurings of discontent from some fans because the atmosphere's not always been up to it in between, and they say that the rest of the stadium doesn't get involved as much. And that actually was probably the biggest difference last night, is that the rest of the stadium was involved to a much greater extent, with every time that Karim Adeyemi tracked back, which was a lot, and every small moment they were there for the team as well. So yeah, it was a special night for Dortmund, and having been at that Mainz game where they lost the title last season, they need these nights so soon after to help, I think, rebuild supporter morale of fresher, happy memories. And that was a big one. It won't be sealed unless they do finish the job in Paris, but still to I think, deserve the win in the end, even if PSG had a greater number of good chances in the game. I don't think you can really begrudge Dortmund for it because of the way they went about their task.
I mean, you made such a good point yesterday. We did the TV together in Australia and saying, you know, it's because it's terracing. You got to get there early. You got to get your spot. Reminds me of, you know, Cambridge when we started getting good and other people would turn up. And you're like, well, this is my bar. This is where I stand. Like, you've got to get there. If it's a game like that, I presume there's a bit of a pecking order. You know, people sort of like shuffling in and then just standing right in front of someone when it's their spot. Archie's right, isn't he, Baz? I mean, I thought Dortmund was so good, and I said at intro, and yet you look at chances created, and actually this could have been 2-0, 3-0 either side, 3-3. Actually, 1-0 is quite a surprise that there weren't more goals, actually.
Yeah, because you say Dortmund were better in pretty much every department, but PSG still created, I don't know, 5 decent scoring chances, should have had a couple of goals. Fabian Ruiz diving header that he put wide from 6 yards. I mean, you really have to hit the target from there. He should have scored that. It was more or less a bullet header. Mbappe hitting the post, Hakimi hitting the post. Those could have gone in. So while it's a good result for Borussia Dortmund, the tie is still very much in the balance. I presume Dortmund are pleased with it, but they'll probably think we should have got a couple more. Because they did have good chances.
Yeah, they did. Philippe, you put a lovely note in the WhatsApp group describing the Niklas Füllkrug finish, as you called it. Did you say it was like an otter slipping off a wet rock?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes, that's what I said.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded simultaneously beautiful and like something from the Urban Dictionary. That's what I thought. But what a touch. That super slow-mo of Füllkrug taking the ball out of the sky was beautiful.
It's the way as well. You know, it's like when you see the wheels of a train and they seem to be going the wrong way because of the speed.
Yeah.
Seems like the ball actually does this a little bit before it settles just above the surface and skims on the surface, you know, like a pebble you throw across a still lake. And the speed of the execution and where he hits it as well, the part of his foot he hits it with.
Yeah.
It's the sweetest of sweet spots. It's absolutely glorious. He had a magnificent game, Emil Füllkrug. And he should basically, and he should also, we shouldn't forget, he should have been given a penalty. That was, you know, you don't fall, you
don't
dive.
Is that the push?
The back.
Do you know what? I thought it was a blatant penalty until I saw the replay. I wasn't sure, but I do think they should have had one in the first half. After Sabitzer's shot is saved,
yeah,
I can't remember. Archie, can you remember? Who was there was a sort of coming together, and it looked to me, I mean, we know from Anthony Taylor and Everton, Nottingham Forest, Anthony Taylor's not giving any penalties anytime soon, but I thought Dortmund could have had one then.
I think it was Adeyemi on that side. For Philippe to be talking about Niklas Füllkrug having all that grace when...
Yeah,
I've been at Dortmund enough times this season and heard fans groaning about Füllkrug's first touch and the way that he's linking up with the rest of the team. And yet this is symbolic of Borussia Dortmund this season and how on the big nights in the Champions League, they've turned it on, but domestically, they've not been having it. The comparison that I've used with you before, Max, is... They're not happy eating their vegetables, but when it comes to eating their ice cream, boy, do they love ice cream. And the thing is that they're going to get rewarded with more ice cream as well, because this result meant that Germany has that fifth Champions League spot now, which is funny because it's going to a league that didn't support a European Super League idea. And my understanding of this whole creation of the fifth spot was to placate those clubs who are pushing for it, and yet the direct beneficiaries of it are the people who are going like, well, we're continuing along our own way, thanks. So yeah, all in all, bizarre. And just back to Füllkrug quickly, just another reminder that this guy was 2 years ago playing in the German second division for Werder Bremen and was not even first choice striker for the entirety of that season, and since then has gone on to go to a World Cup with Germany, score at a World Cup with Germany, get a move to Borussia Dortmund, and is now scoring vital goals in not just a Champions League quarterfinal, but a semi-final. And the Dortmund CEO, after the quarterfinal, had the nerve to go to Füllkrug. Oh, finally, you've scored, because he'd gone 9 games without a goal.
Yeah, he's got a real air of a League One journeyman centre forward who's good for about 8 goals and about 1,000 flick-ons.
He's Kiefer Moore.
He is, yeah. He really has a touch of the Kiefer Moores, that's for sure. Look, there were some brilliant performances. You could list pretty much the whole team for Dortmund. And Adeyemi, I thought, was my man of the match. But a lot of people getting in touch about Sancho. And Dave says it. Look, I know there will be lots of should United look at signing this Sancho lad jokes. But in all seriousness, how do we analyse how badly it's gone at United and how free and happy he's looking now? Do we underestimate how important happiness is to footballers? I don't know what you think, Baz.
Well, obviously, if you're happy and content in life, you're going to perform better at work. He didn't deliver at Manchester United. By several accounts, his timekeeping was poor, which isn't good enough. I'm completely anal about punctuality personally. But I just think if you're in a team, in a squad, or in any workplace, lack of punctuality is a lack of respect for your colleagues, I think. It might not seem a big deal, but it seems to have been a real problem for him. You know, just be on time. It's not hard. Just talk, get him on the plane, which is all well and good. You know, he has, 23 caps or so. If you're getting him on the plane on the back of one brilliant performance, who are you leaving out? That's always the question you have to ask. I don't know how good he's been throughout this season or if this was a one-off standout performance against a brilliant side. But he's clearly playing with confidence, with a bit of swagger that we didn't see at Manchester United at all, or maybe on one or two occasions. He set up a couple of chances. He had Nuno Mendes absolutely on toast, and it was a really, really good performance from him. But I don't think that detracts from the issues which led to him leaving Manchester United to go back to Dortmund in the first place. So what happens during the summer? He's still a Manchester United player. Will they want him back? And, you know, everyone's saying United are the bigger club than Dortmund. Dortmund are in the Champions League semi-final. Manchester United are nowhere near that. Dortmund have a bigger stadium than Old Trafford. The atmosphere at Dortmund Stadium is 100 times better than any Premier League ground. So why would you want to leave that to go to what I would say is a club that isn't showing much sign of winning anything, really?
You've reminded me, Baz, of when Shinji Kagawa moved to Manchester United, and I think his first game was Everton away. And I remember a commentator saying, "Oh, but will he have played in an atmosphere like this?" And I thought, yes, weekly, actually. Sancho has been having a good, if not great, time since coming back. He scored a fantastic goal at the weekend away at RB Leipzig, but they went down 4-1, and that's been a mood of Dortmund against the big teams in the Bundesliga this season. They've taken 5 points from 8 games against the 4 teams above them. There's this desire to sign Sancho, but whether the financial package can come together for Dortmund is another matter. Just to pick up on the national team topic, and how that works actually for the German side of this. Last night you had Mats Hummels, Nico Schlotterbeck, Emre Can, Julian Brandt, Karim Adeyemi and Niklas Füllkrug all part of that brilliant performance. Only one of those players was included in Julian Nagelsmann's last Germany squad, and that was Niklas Füllkrug. And as it stands, Nagelsmann says that he only wants to make one or two changes from the last squad. And he's going to be put under a certain amount of pressure by those performances, I think, particularly more of the centre-backs of Schlotterbeck and Hummels. The first-choice pairing right now will be Jonathan Tah of Bayer Leverkusen and Antonio Rudiger of Real Madrid. And then behind that, you've got Valdemar Anton, who's had a tremendous season at Stuttgart. But it's just quite funny that you can be playing in a Champions League semi-final and putting in that performance, and it's no guarantee that, as you can see, we've got 6 players for Germany there who will probably not make the squad. five of them, I'd say.
Oh, no, Germany are going to win the Euros now. I don't know, they're going to have a good squad. As producer Joel writes regarding his timekeeping, maybe no one told him that Germany's an hour ahead. So he's always half an hour late. He just hasn't...
I wanted to ask you if you do cryptic crosswords.
No, I'm not clever enough.
I've tried, but I'm not very good at it.
That's a pity. Well, I don't know if you know Rob Jacques or Rob Jakes, who does the crossword for The Blizzard, which is a football-inspired crossword. This is relevant, by the way, I reassure you. And he came up with that clue, which is Johnson, a cad, appalling right winger. Five letters, six letters. Johnson, a cad, appalling right winger.
Okay, so is it Jadon Sancho is the answer? I mean,
yes, it is, because it's an anagram of Johnson, a cad. And the appalling is the sign that there is an anagram here. Anyway, I thought I wanted to share this.
Is Radio 4?
I know. Well, it's good that, because I think some of the listeners like to think this is the intellectual part of football broadcasting. And I'm not sure it always is, but sometimes it's good to elevate it. Can I ask you about PSG, Philippe? What did you make of their performance? Because I was thinking yesterday, if that had been Real Madrid, right, who were under the cosh and didn't perform and miss some chances, I'd have been like, they knew what they were doing and they'll be fine. But I just wonder if it's our preconceived ideas or if just PSG were a bit rubbish yesterday.
I wouldn't say rubbish, because they're much, much better in the second half without changing much. I mean, yeah, the tactical organisation changed. They didn't change at half time. It was just a question. I think they were a bit surprised by the intensity of Dortmund's play. They tried to press high up the pitch, which they don't always do, PSG, and it didn't quite work. Dortmund were finding ways through the lines. And then afterwards, after the pause, I think basically Luis Enrique just asked his players to be more on the job. And they were. But my goodness, some of the French press is absolutely scathing about them today. I was reading the summing up of the game in Le Parisien. And I thought, surely we haven't seen the same game. I mean, the adjectives which were chosen were adjectives I would have chosen for... Manchester United's performance in the Champions League, for example. It was that bad. Kylian Mbappe came from a lot of criticism. I mean, he curled that shot against the post, but he was once again underwhelming in terms of his influence, lost loads of balls. So, as you know, in France, there is a real anti-Mbappe current.
Is that because he's going to Madrid? Is that the reason, or...?
I think there's partly yes, and partly also because of his body language. The fact he's not really performing at the moment like he was earlier in the season. But this said, and also people are questioning the fact that Gonçalo Ramos, for example, stayed on the bench, as he's been staying on the bench for the whole of the knockout phase, when he's actually the number one scorer at the moment in Ligue 1. He's at 8 goals in 11 games, I think, over the last 11. And he's being totally ignored. He's left on the bench. Many people, that rankles with them. But if you look at PSG as a whole, you're looking at a team that has lost, hasn't lost in French League since September, which is impressive, and which is playing with a kind of togetherness, certainly, I think, that was absent in previous incarnations. And the big players are players like Vitinha and Fabian Ruiz. They're the ones who actually make that team tick rather than... And it's a team in Luis Enrique's image, and they won't be as bad in the second leg, which is why I do share your view that they can do it, overturn that in Paris in the Parc des Princes. But there were other things about the games which I thought were worth mentioning on the PSG side. Seeing Nasser Al Khelaifi, chairman of PSG and European Club Association, sitting in the presidential box next to a convicted criminal, the former French president Nicolas Sarkozy, was actually something which is an illustration of a lot of things that PSG stands for. And he's, by the way, dear lawyers, dear lawyer friends, he has been convicted.
I bet they're getting interested now.
And many other things as well. So, yes, he's been convicted. So, and that was a reminder of where PSG are right now. But they're not in a bad place. If you go back to the field for a second, and with a little bit more luck and composure in front of goal, they probably would have come back with something a bit better than a defeat. But very, very tough again. Loads of criticism towards this side, loads of criticism towards Mbappe, towards Luis Enrique, but I think is misplaced. It's just the way that PSG is treated in the French media. That's all there is.
I think Luis Enrique was caught a little bit off guard by Jadon Sancho playing on the right-hand side last night, because you saw the amount of space that they were prepared to give Julian Ryerson running up from right back, whereas on the left-hand side, Ian Mattson was shut off from making those kinds of dangerous runs that we've seen him make quite recently for Dortmund, particularly in the Champions League. I think I was surprised that he didn't really seem to do much to protect Nuno Mendes a little bit more.
Yeah, especially since Nuno Mendes, according to, you know, some information, was not actually 100% physically fit. So you would have thought, you know, Sancho is the threat, and that he would do something about it, but he was set in his ways. I agree with you. That's a very good observation.
I thought... Thanks.
well done, 5 points.
Occasionally they come. I thought that Marquinhos had an excellent game, despite what happened as well. I say despite what happened, despite some of the chances that Dortmund were getting, two key blocks against Julian Brandt. And Marquinhos is such a
the one on Brandt,
an important figure for PSG fans as well, as somebody who's been there through all these years of madness at the club, but also just continually performs in big games. He was very crucial against Barcelona in the last round as well. He's somebody I'll be looking out for next week. The one thing that I think is a question mark is the injury to Lucas Hernandez and what it would mean with Beraldo playing there for a full 90 minutes, because I know that he's not been as consistent for PSG. But just another point, Vitinha, I've not seen him live much, but there's a certain energy and buzz to that guy that you can see why you have him at the heart of a team to set the tempo, to give you that kind of rhythm. He was impressive. I wonder if Luis Enrique will consider putting Kylian Mbappe out to the left-hand side a little bit more, just to drag Dortmund out from their comfort zone, and maybe then start with Gonçalo Ramos in the next game.
Or Kolumweni. The thing is that Gonçalo Ramos has also been taken out of the team that played the semi-final of the French Cup, which was a big game against Stade Rennais. He wasn't there. So that either there is something happening between the two, well, there is a tactical subtlety that is escaping us all, because, frankly, everybody who's seen Gonçalo Ramos over the past, I would say, 3 months with PSG would say he has to start. He has to start. So he might have to do something about it. I mean, and yes, shifting Mbappe back to the left wing, where many people anyway would say that's the place where he's at his most effective, when he's playing as an out-and-out winger.
Yeah, except perhaps Vinicius Jr., but that's for another pod, isn't it? Just a note, a big fan of Ian Mattson, as someone who's traded off footballers called Ian. There aren't many coming up on the rails, so good to have an Ian back in there. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll look ahead to the games of the Europa League.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Europa League, then Marseille, Atalanta, Roma, Leverkusen. Archie, Leverkusen's probably the favourites for the tournament, and just a few games away from being unbeaten all season. and it doesn't matter how many times you say that, in all competitions, is ludicrous.
46 games unbeaten. And they've really started to test the limits of that in recent weeks with some of these late goals. I've been at both of their latest late displays against Borussia Dortmund, where they scored in the 97th minute, and against Stuttgart, where they scored with the final kick of the game in the 96th minute. And I was next to a Bayer Leverkusen official who just wasn't even reacting with celebration anymore after the Stuttgart goal, after the late goal against Stuttgart, just turned around and went, "You've got to be kidding me." that's how everyday an occurrence it's become for them. The thing to note ahead of this game, I think, is that Florian Wirtz has been rested from the start for the last two Bundesliga games, I think, to give him a bit more energy in the tank. He is of a few Leverkusen players who are very important to this team. I think I've mentioned before the likes of Grimaldo, Xhaka, Tah. Wirtz is the X factor to that. And yeah, they really like to get control on a game in a way that Bayern Munich and Dortmund have struggled to across a league campaign this season. It shows you that you can be set up as a team to play well in cup competitions, but does that translate to the everyday tussle of a league campaign? And Leverkusen have that, and now we're finding out, do they have that as well in knockout competition? And so far, it looks like they do. But I think Roma is going to be a huge test of that, because they've really kicked it up a notch since Daniele De Rossi took over from Jose Mourinho. The performance against Brighton, I thought, was really impressive, even if Brighton have slipped off in the Premier League a bit now. But I think if there's going to be a team that beats them in the final weeks of the season, Leverkusen that is, then I wouldn't be surprised if it's Roma across one of these legs.
What about Marseille? We obviously saw Atalanta beat Liverpool with our favourite Charles de Catalera, Philippe. What chance do you give Marseille? They've had a bit of a, you know, basket case season, which feels quite Marseille-y to me.
I think you can say that, I think. If you look at it, they're no great chicks. I think they've won 1 in 6 in the Ligue 1. They're on their third manager of the season, Jean-Louis Gasset, a name that you might be familiar with for two reasons. Once, he was Laurent Blanc's faithful right-hand man throughout all of his jobs. And second, he's the guy who was sacked by the Ivory Coast before
they
on their winning run.
Yeah. So he was the manager, but he lost all their games. Yes, that's
absolutely
right.
Absolutely. And so he lands at Marseille, a club that has already eaten away Marcelino and Gennaro Gattuso that season, who are doing badly in the league, but who somehow are still in with a shout after going out of a pretty difficult group in the Europa League. And you look at the clubs they've taken out of the competition, that's pretty damn serious. And what is this thing again, you know, that Archie was talking about? Look at Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga. Okay, they're certainly better than Marseille's. All things being compared, you know, mutatis mutandis. But in Ligue 1, they've been very, very poor, very disappointing, in turmoil. In Europe, they seriously think that they have a chance of bringing another European trophy to Marseille, whom, as they're never tired of reminding anybody, everybody, especially PSG fans, they're the only French club to have won the cup with the big ears, as we call it, La Coupe aux Grandes Oreilles. And they've done that with a team which has got academy products on them. There's been loads of injuries. There's a guy called Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. You forgot about him? He's still there, still playing, and he's still scoring a few very important goals in Europe. And you're thinking, listen, they went past Shakhtar. They went past Benfica. They went past Villarreal. These were not small teams or small clubs. Maybe they're able to do it. And the atmosphere, okay, it's not going to be the yellow wall, because there is no yellow wall at the Velodrome. But the atmosphere in Marseille would be absolutely fabulous. And I give them a chance. I want to believe, you know.
Would it be good for European football if Marseille won? Because if my memory serves me correctly, their fans have disgraced themselves on a few occasions this season, and Marcelino basically walked out because he said, "Look, this team is unmanageable. I can't cope with the demands of these fans and their aggression."
Yeah, well, there's nothing new about that. I mean, the history of Marseille is the history of their own bus being stoned by fans, with fans erupting in the offices at the training ground, demanding to see the sports director, which they did, demanding to talk to the manager, and so on and so forth. Yeah, they are pretty wild. I agree with you on this one. Whether it would be a bad thing for the club to go through to the final, I don't necessarily agree with that.
I'm not saying it would be. I mean, there's a certain romance and mystique surrounding Marseille, but they do have a propensity to misbehave.
They do. It's not new. It's nothing new, and it's not going to change.
In the Conference League, then, Fiorentina versus Club Bruges and Aston Villa Olympiacos. And look, it's a massive opportunity this Baz for Villa, isn't it? I know they may have aspirations beyond the Conference League, but you know, you saw the West Ham fans having a really lovely time last year. You've got to think right now, they should throw all their eggs in this basket. I'm not just saying that from I'd like Tottenham to steal top four point of view.
Oh, it's a brilliant opportunity for Villa, and in Unai Emery, they have a manager whose pedigree in Europe is, you know, second to quite a few, but not too many when it comes to the second and third tier competitions. I have no idea whether Olympiacos are any good or not. If they've made it this far, they must be handy enough, but I'd probably back Villa to beat them. You know, Villa are a very good side.
Second to Craig Noon, or as someone on Sky Sports News once said, second to Craig, no one, which was fun. Look, Chelsea play Spurs this evening in the Premier League, Baz. And just been saying he doesn't care about set pieces. He's in his sort of typically chipper press conferences. To quote Billy Joel, "You may be right, I may be crazy, but it's maybe a lunatic you're looking for. I'm just not interested in it. I never have been." I think the last bit was just about him talking about set pieces. I don't remember Billy Joel writing, an upbeat tune about
thesis about corners,
about zonal marking, and Ben White fiddling with Vicario's gloves. Chelsea have 14 injuries ahead of this game. Spurs without Ben Davis and Destiny Ndoggi, so I don't know who'll play left back. But Spurs need this, Barry, if they want to get top four.
They do. And I was saying to someone yesterday, I have literally no idea what way this game is going to go. Couldn't call it. Chelsea are a mess, but they do occasionally tend to raise their game against quality opposition. Spurs are a good team and are capable of absolutely calamitous performances. So this is a game I'm looking forward to. And I usually take Thursdays off when it comes to football watching, but I will certainly be tuning into this one. Not a clue what way it'll go. I'd edge towards them just because of Chelsea's injury list.
I don't know if you've addressed the Bournemouth table, Max, where if you look at the results since, I think it's the 10th match day in the Premier League. I'm talking in slightly Germanified terms here, just to explain. If you start making a table of when a team has become successful, they generally put either the name of the coach in and then call it, for example, when Julian Nagelsmann came in, they called it Die Nagelsmann Tabelle.
Right, okay. Yeah, like the Solskjaer table. We're aware of... Yeah, we get that.
Right.
I see where you're coming from.
You get the
from.
Point. Point yeah. is, whilst there's a bit of a kind of a Harry Potter kind of conundrum here, where I think the phrase is, neither can live while the other survives, where ever since Bournemouth have become good, Tottenham have been bad. Namely right. to the point that, well, Spurs were unbeaten after the first 10 games. They were top of the league. And if you look, since Bournemouth have become good, Tottenham are very mid-table. And I was just looking into it and thinking, what has gone wrong there? And for me, I think it's a little bit of a drop-off in terms of that squad and having enough players on the same level to be able to rotate effectively, because you saw in those first 10 games of the season how good they were. But you need to play such a high-risk system that Postecoglou wants to. You need to have such a group of players who are going to be able to come in for you. And I think that maybe someone like Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, just over a consistent period of time, is he going to be able to step up to levels that the players ahead of him have done? And that the biggest question for me with Spurs is what happens with the next few transfer windows and how they manage that.
I think if I was speaking to him about it personally, he'd probably call me mate a lot in his most withering tone. But I just find Postecoglou's, you know, because he was quizzed at his presser yesterday about the corners and he was, look, I'm not going to worry about that. I just tell my players to get the ball down and play some football, mate. But it just seems like willful negligence that this thing can be sorted out pretty easily and he just isn't fussed about addressing the issue. What is clearly an issue.
Yeah, I mean, he did put Pape Sarr on Ben White in the second half and Arsenal didn't score from a corner. So I think he just doesn't... I think he thinks press conference, and he's probably right, are just really stupid. Yeah. He's just like, this is all really just stupid. You're asking me stupid things. I'm going to reply with stupid things. People will write stupid things, and the wheels keep on turning. And so he just...
Now, that's fine. I mean, I remember Richard Gere was on Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode's radio show, film show, a few years ago, and they were talking about him doing press junkets, and he said, you know, that's what you get paid for. You know, the acting is, that's a piece of piss. It's the press junket at the end. That's what you get the big bucks for, because it's so stupid.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I guess it's the same with football managers, isn't it?
Matt Law writing in the Telegraph saying, Chelsea absolutely adamant the club did not pay for a flight for Ruben Amorim to visit London last week and did not hold any meetings or talks with him. Which is exactly what you'd say if you had paid for flights for Ruben Amorim. I mean, who knows?
Do you reckon they bought the plane instead of buying the flights, much in the way that they sold the hotel? I'm thinking, how have they got around it?
Did they sell the plane to themselves? They're good at that. Yeah.
Luton Everton on Friday night. Luton definitely need the points there, don't they? In the title race at the bottom as well, Nottingham Forest go to Sheffield United and Burnley play Newcastle at home. At the top, Arsenal home to Bournemouth, Man City home to Wolves. So presumably, and you play first, Philippe. You're the 12:30 kickoff Arsenal Bournemouth. And well, we've just established that Bournemouth are good. So it will depend on how Spurs do tonight, depending on whether Bournemouth will be good. But do you feel, I mean, obviously you've got to win. You just got to keep winning.
Yeah. They probably will, though I have to say it's a fixture that I don't see approaching with complete confidence because they've been absolutely terrific. They're totally relaxed. And at Bournemouth actually seems to have, you know, usually when, okay, you've established your status in the Premier League, you're ahead of your objectives, there could be a feeling of, okay, we relax a bit, we're on the beach, so to speak. At Bournemouth, it seems to have the opposite impact. They seem to be thinking, hey, let's find out how high we can finish in this table. So the motivation is here, but motivation mixed with relaxation. Dominic Solanke in the form of his life. Obviously a very fine manager. Superb results. That's why I am not entirely confident, but yes, they have to win. Keep the pressure on Manchester City and hope that Wolves do them a big, big, big favour.
Brentford Fulham, Archie. We, especially Barry, have not been able to work out all season if Fulham are good or not good. Is that an opinion shared by the fans? What's the vibe?
Why do you think I, as a fan, have worked that out?
Well, no, it's true. I mean, if the vibe is you haven't, that's totally fine.
Not really. This is a big game for both sides. Fulham like to ruffle Brentford's hair. Brentford like to treat Fulham as their cup final. I have mixed memories of this game. I remember 10 years ago going to it when Brentford beat us in the last minute. And that memory abides, as well as getting locked out my flat and having to break in by jumping over the wall at the back. You know, when you think, how can this evening get any worse? And then when I was sleeping on the kitchen sofa bed, because the flat had one, because I lost my keys.
What, your keys to the bedroom? I mean,
were you pissed?
It was 3 a.m.
Well, hang on, but like, if you've got into the house, if you've got into the
but
kitchen,
no one was waking up.
But if you got into the kitchen, right? Surely you can get into your bedroom. Like, why'd you get into bed in the kitchen?
You see, I was freshly moved in there and I didn't trust all the other flatmates, so I'd locked my room and lost my keys and
company. Right, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
One of those flat chairs. Oh, God.
I then moved to Germany 6 months later, so all's good.
No, that's true.
Point is, Fulham had their big moment against Brentford more recently in that playoff final behind closed doors when Joe Bryan did David Raya at his near post from way out. But Fulham, I don't think, have won yet at the G-Tech or whatever that excuse of a garden centre of a stadium is. Albeit, can I really have a stab at Brentford Stadium when we can't complete our own? So, yeah. In answer to your original question, Max...
That's what I wanted. That's what I was looking for, not like the history of your whole life, but it's fine, you know.
It's all right. I don't know. Brentford Fulham sparks memories. It's been a... You can't say, well, if Rodrigo Muniz had started earlier in the season, what would have happened? That's... He needed to go through that experience in the first half of the season to get to this point. So you can't have one without the other. I think all in all, what more can you ask for as a Fulham fan on the pitch when you've had a good cup run? You've beaten and stayed unbeaten against Arsenal this season, won away at Old Trafford for the first time in 21 years. Yeah, take that. Shame about the ticket prices.
Luton Everton, we mentioned 7-7 and Everton on yesterday's pod, but you have been following the story very closely, Philippe. Keep it short, keep it legal. Here we go.
Oh, keep it legal. Next item on the list, please.
Can I just ask, Philippe, do you foresee any point in the near future 7-7-7 taking over Everton?
No, I don't. I don't. For tons of reason, and I think that... I'm sorry, I didn't listen to the pod yesterday, but the filing for bankruptcy of their airline in Australia is the one thing, is the first time that actually the cracks which have been visible to all the people who are looking at this group of companies, this one has become visible to absolutely everybody. It's an absolute mess, to be honest. I've been talking to loads of Everton fans over the past few weeks and few months, and It's a case, the devil you know, the devil you don't, the frying pan and the fire. It's very much that kind of zone in which they're living at the moment. Because you were talking about the Luton-Everton game. Well, we've got to keep in mind the fact that should Everton go into administration before the season finished, and there has been talk of that, because they brought in somebody who is a specialist, you know, they brought people who are specialists in administration, well, they would be deducted automatically a number of points. And that would put them actually in a position where they can still be relegated.
It's normally 9, isn't it? Is it normally 9 points? So that would take them to 27 points. Yeah, so 2 points ahead of Luton.
So, yes, it is. So it's still a crucial game. And as regards 777, rather than having the lawyers, losing their rag over what is and what should be and what shouldn't be on this podcast, please... have a look at what Paul Brown and I have been writing about these guys since August of last year in Yozimar. It's not very edifying. They've also had huge problems in Liège with the Standard, unpaid bills. This is all a matter of record, by the way, dear lawyers. This has been confirmed by the Belgian national broadcaster. Unpaid bills, and which go into the millions, and so on and so forth. So it's an absolute mess, and I really empathise with all Everton fans who are not responsible for the current state of affairs.
No, of course. Some, I mean, we were talking about it yesterday a little bit, that, you know, some Everton fans, because football is so tribal, and obviously not all, but some, you know, shoot the messenger, right? And have been critical of you and Josimar for sort of unearthing the news.
What would they prefer? That they suddenly have a new owner who collapses, which collapses in no time? Do they prefer a new owner which has got serious history in US courts? I mean, again, I won't go into details because everybody can refer to our reporting, but I can tell you there is no agenda at work here. And even there's no agenda against 777 Partners. It's just the fact that it's the truth that we're trying to investigate and we're putting it out there. And that's that. If people don't like it, they don't like it. But, you know, they should understand that if 777 don't take control of the club, they might have dodged a far bigger bullet than the one which will hit Everton one way or another in the next few weeks and months.
Crystal Palace play Man United on Monday night. We'll talk about it on Wednesday's pod next week. Adam Craft in The Athletic writing that Sir Jim Ratcliffe told staff today he wants to end the club's work-from-home culture. Staff must return to offices full-time, part of Ineos's shock therapy to reboot the culture at Old Trafford and the London offices. One problem is that Manchester United's offices were reconfigured post-COVID and there aren't actually enough desks for everyone to be in currently. Good replies about where Jim Ratcliffe decided to work from, not always from home, whether this also applies to the players was quite a nice line as well. Anyway, that'll do for part two. We'll begin part three with Chelsea's title defence in the WSL taking a hit at Liverpool.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Archie, some breaking news from Germany.
Yes, Max. So you might be aware that Bayern Munich have been trying to find a new coach for next season. They've been turned down by Xabi Alonso. They've been rejected by Julian Nagelsmann. And now, today, they've received a third rejection.
Ralf Rangnick
has decided to stay on as coach of the Austrian national team. So the options for who becomes the next Bayern coach are thinning ever more. I wonder if they're going to go and knock now on Hansi Flick's door again to see if he fancies it, even though Hansi Flick has the noises from his camp are that he would prefer to go abroad now. But this is very bad for Bayern amidst everything that's going on.
Would they ask Tuchel to stay if he won the Champions League?
No. No, they've already said that that chapter is over. I don't think either side wants to continue working with one another either. This comes off the back, Max, of an interview or a talk that was given by Honorary President Uli Hoeneß last Friday, where there were some memorable quotes. So just for a bit of context, for anyone who might not know, Uli Hoeneß is now the honorary president, but he is the biggest architect of modern-day Bayern. So he still has a spot on the board and is incredibly influential in the club. Now, he said a few things. He said, regarding Xabi Alonso, that my wife said straight away, if he has character, he won't come to Bayern. And if he doesn't have character and says yes, then he's not the right coach for you. And as always, she was right. Which is an incredibly weird thing to say when you are in the process of trying to get a new coach, and it basically suggests that Ralf Rangnick is spineless if he comes away from the Austria project at that moment. He also said, by the way, that Ralf Rangnick was their third choice coach, so I'm sure that's not helped Rangnick in that mind. I think the reason why Rangnick has turned the job down is because he wouldn't be given enough of a say. You've got two new sporting director figures there installed in the last year in Max Eberl and Christoph Freund. Added to that, the influence that Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, former CEO, still has on the board as well. And I don't think Rangnick was going to get enough say. But what also created more headlines before this Bayern Real Madrid game was Uli Hoeneß laying into Thomas Tuchel and saying how He wasn't somebody who would really develop players and put his arm around players, that he preferred to just buy in new players. And Tuchel took offence to that, of his coaching honour. But then again, Thomas Tuchel did also lay into Min-jae Kim in the press conference after, you might have seen, saying that he was overambitious, I think is the best translation, in his attempts to get the ball on two occasions.
So now Kim Min-jae needs to criticise like someone who does his boots, and he can just go down and down and down until the little guy. I'm just going to move us on. Jim says, will Emma Hayes' last dance end up being even less trophy-laden than Jurgen Klopp's? Barry, amazing game in the WSL last night, and Liverpool beating Chelsea.
Yeah, and Chelsea's title hopes have taken a massive dent as we approach the home straight of the season. Well, they're halfway up the home straight or more. Chelsea, with all due respect to Liverpool, Chelsea played this game like a team who had just come off the back of two really grueling encounters in the Champions League against Barcelona.
Yeah.
I won't lie, I just saw a highlights package, but they looked really knackered. And they went ahead. They should have gone 2-0 up early doors. Liverpool goalkeeper Tegan Mika made a brilliant save. And then Liverpool equalised and Chelsea were playing catch-up from that point on. It was 2-1 Liverpool, 2-2, 3-2 Liverpool, 3-3, and Liverpool won 4-3. Chelsea could have rescued a point right at the death deep in injury time with a Beaver Jones volley, but it was really well saved. And the commentator said that Chelsea had only conceded 3 goals from set pieces all season. They conceded 3 goals from corners in this game. Yeah. So that's what did for them.
Yeah, it looks like they're learning from Tottenham/Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
How to defend.
But that seems a remarkable stat. I think Liverpool only had 4 corners. They scored from 3 of them, 3 headers. One was helped along by a Chelsea player. I think it went down as an own goal. So the upshot is that Chelsea have 3 games left. Man City have 2. City are 6 points ahead. Chelsea have a game in hand. City have a fairly significant goal difference advantage. But Chelsea are at home to Bristol City on Sunday. They're already relegated. That could be an opportunity to get the goal difference up. Then they have to play Spurs away, Man United away. Interestingly, Manchester City play Arsenal at home on Sunday. So Emma is relying on her good pal Jonas Eidevall to do her a favour. which is lovely for her and him, I'm sure. And City's other game is Villa away. They're in 7th place. So it's not all over for Chelsea, but it's the odds are stacked against them. And they really need Arsenal to do them a favour this weekend.
Philippe, FIFA have signed a deal with Saudi government-owned energy company Aramco that runs until the end of 2027. Seems to tick so many boxes in Philippe Auclair bingo. they become a major partner at the 2026 Men's World Cup, the 2027 Women's World Cup. Gianni Infantino said, we're delighted to welcome Aramco to FIFA's family of global partners. Aramco has a strong track record of supporting world-class events, but also a focus on developing grassroots sport initiatives. We look forward to collaborating with them on a variety of initiatives over the coming years. Amin H. Nasser, Aramco President CEO, said, through this partnership with FIFA, we aim to contribute to football development and harness the power of sport to make an impact around the globe. It reflects our ambition to enable vibrant communities and extends our backing of a sport as a platform for growth. Do you think this partnership, Philippe, is about harnessing Aramco's commitment to grassroots initiatives?
They certainly have an impact on the globe, since they're, I think, the single biggest contributor to global warming or carbon emissions, Aramco. And it's not me who's saying that. It's a study by The Guardian, which established that they, who are 100% state-owned by the state ruled by Mohammed bin Salman, have emitted more carbon dioxide. I mean, it's billions of tons than anybody else.
Are they worse than all the cows in the world? Do we know? Is that?
You're talking methane here.
Ah, sorry, yes.
I'm talking CO2. It's a different thing.
I get them muddled up. It's a real impact on my home life.
The thing is that, obviously, there's a lot of attention being given to the relationship between FIFA and Saudi Arabia, and there will be more over the years to come, because the gigantic project of hosting the 2034 World Cup in Saudi Arabia, which is going to be it's already been agreed. We all know that. The process of building the stadiums, they attract a lot of attention. The process has already started because it's basically Qatar 2022 on whatever Ben Johnson was taking in Seoul. And there will be, of course, focus on the human rights and the cost, because these stadiums are also built by migrant workers. The other elephant in the room is the environmental impact of those competitions. FIFA keeps telling us that it is woke to the fact that human activity produces carbon dioxide, which is causing global warming, to put it in very simple terms. And they've even said that the 2022 World Cup would be the first carbon neutral World Cup, which of course was complete bullshit, actually. Let's call it. Yeah, bollocks. I was hesitating between the two, but it was complete bollocks, as every study since then has shown. No, it was not carbon.
Well, as we're on the subject of cattle, you could say bullocks.
Yes, it was complete bullocks. And well, it's nice to laugh about things like that from time to time. But anyway, so. And what are we doing this when we see this governing body, which is telling us that he's trying to work for the good of the game, the good of humanity, blah, 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 is very aware of what is happening with climate change, global warming and so forth. And on the other hand, the response to that is to make the tournaments even bigger, to have more tournaments added to the calendar, adding to, you know, the frenzy of, you know, fuel consumption. And at the same time, choosing as the main sponsor a company which is one of the biggest polluters on the planet. And this is not a problem? I mean, come on. It should be a big problem. And unfortunately, it's not talked about anymore or enough, because for some reason, anything goes. And that, I think, we're so inured to the way FIFA has been working under Gianni Infantino, that we take this as being just another proof. Yes, that's exactly what they're like. And we don't do a thing about it. And that's really, really, really more than irritates me. It angers me and makes me actually quite irate towards our own lack of reaction and the lack of reaction of the football world to that. Nobody has said a word about it. Come on, let's have the biggest oil producer on the planet as our main sponsor. Come on, guys. Be serious.
Yeah, The Guardian reporting in 2019 that Aramco is both the most profitable and the most polluting company of all time.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a win of sorts, isn't it? Dan says, not a question. Just keen to see if any on the panel can guess the answer to this. Cian had tweeted, you'll never guess what the full-time score was, and posted a tweet from Cardiff City's Academy going, 85th minute, we equalise at Millwall to make it 4-4. If you have seen it, don't mention it. Otherwise, would anyone like to guess what the final score was between Cardiff City Academy and Millwall Academy?
7-6.
88 minutes, Millwall score 5-4. 91 minutes, Millwall extend their lead 6-4. 93 minutes, the host score again 7-4. 95th minute, goal 8-4. 96 minutes, defeat 8-4. Hashtag City has won. Neil says, read Daniel Sturridge's punditry. We were complimenting it the other day. While commentating on a game, I can't remember which, Dave Jones asked him if this was a potential banana skin. And he replied, they're not playing Mario Kart, Dave. Probably my moment of the season. It's a very good line, isn't it? And finally, George says, hi, Max, Barry, producer Joel and everyone else. Are you aware that vasectomy chat has spread to other podcasts? I was listening to the BBC Rugby Union Weekly towards the end of last week, and at the end of the episode, they read out a message from a man who was listening to them while undergoing the operation. Are you happy to be trendsetters, or do you want to be the sole choice of vasectomy patients? Cheers, George. Can imagine, Barry, that, you know, a vasectomy is a sort of punishment in a drinking game at the rugby club, isn't it? That kind of thing. You drink wee from this shoe.
You don't drink your lager through a dirty sock quick enough.
Exactly. How was the game, Dave? Oh, well, we won, but I did have a vasectomy in the bar afterwards. There we go. Anyway, that'll do for today. Before we go, if you listen to Politics Weekly UK, you might be interested to know that The Guardian's introducing new episodes with Pippa Crerar, The Guardian's political editor, and political correspondent Kieran Stacey. They're bringing you all the insight you need from Westminster to kick off your week. The first episode out this Sunday where they'll be chewing over the fallout from the local elections. Subscribe to Politics Weekly UK and wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes published every Monday. Please listen to Football Weekly before you listen to them in order, please. And that'll do for today. Thank you, Archie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Baz.
Thanks. You just reminded me I have to tip around the corner and cast my vote.
I thought he was going to say I need to go get a vasectomy.
I think that ship has sailed there.
Thanks, Philippe.
Thank you, Max.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Phil Maynard.
This is The Guardian.